Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 88 of the MTB podcast, presented and hosted by Worldwide Cyclery. I am Jeff.
I'm Liam.
And I'm Jared.
In today's episode, we are going to discuss tons of various fun things, mostly about mountain bikes, because that's what MTB stands for.
Yeah.
Jared?
And this is the mountain bike podcast.
This is the mountain bike podcast.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about my recent trip to the Amazon jungle where I got a massive bug bite on my wrist and thought I was going to die.
Oof.
We're going to talk about Jared's triathlon results. He finally did it, even though we've been talking about it for months.
Woo.
Liam's soon-to-come hardtail.
Mm.
Hardtail. How do you feel about that, Liam?
We're going to see.
We're going to talk about how we are supporting kids riding bikes during the month of November rather than promoting consumerism via Black Friday sales. We're going to talk about Trail One, a component brand that we founded with our friend BKXC that'll give back to the trails on top of crafting the components that we've always wanted. We are going to answer piles of listener questions that, as always, range from valuable MTB knowledge and humor. And what else are we talking about here? Oh, that's...
Yeah. Those are notes.
That's secret. Notes. You got to listen.
Yeah. We can't say those.
Mm-mm.
All right, DJ Meatball, play a sound effect.
Do you love riding single track, but you're sick of doing it single? Introducing mtbsingles.com, where you can find the one for you to ride the trail with you. Not only do we have mtbfullsuspensionsingles.com, don't think we forgot about you hardtail riders out there. mtbhardtailsingleriders.com. Check us out. Find the one for you. So, Jeff, you came back from the Amazon covered in bug bites.
Yep.
One of them was worse than the others. Just tell us a little bit about what happened down there.
Well, I went to the Amazon jungle, the western part of it in Peru, to a remote eco lodge that's all off the grid. It was pretty cool. So a friend of mine puts on these trips for entrepreneurs where it gets about 20 of us together. We go to some like remote lodge somewhere and do businessy personal development things and nature stuff, and actually did a mountain bike ride there. I rode a really clapped out old mountain bike with 26 inch wheels and V brakes.
Wow.
With such deteriorated like chain and drivetrain and shifter cable, it didn't even shift, so I just left it in one gear.
A relic.
No dropper post. Yeah, this thing was a relic. It was just like the bike they had at the lodge there. It was nice. Pretty cool. So we hammered out a little 5-mile ride in the Amazon jungle. It was cool. We did a bunch of stuff there. But yes, the Amazon jungle, I'd heard many people before I went there tell me that, oh yeah, it's amazing, but I'd never go back.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, okay. And now I definitely feel the same way. And I realized, because it's just tough living conditions. It's so hot, so humid, you're covered in sweat, your sheets are wet, nothing dries, and you're covered in bug bites and spider bites, and it's
brutal.
So one of them on my wrist got like probably half the size of a golf ball with like a bright red ring around it. And it was a little worrisome because I was a solid 10 hours from like a bad hospital. That was how far I was from Puerto Maldonado in Peru, which, yeah, I would not want to go to that hospital.
Wow.
And I was just, you know, from there, it's like an hour and a half flight to Lima, where hopefully there's a good hospital there. But yeah, so anyways, that was a bit concerning. I still have like a Band-aid situation going. I don't have my watch where I normally wear it because it just still hurts. Like this is like a bug bite that has lingering effects for like 12 days now.
Wow.
It's finally going away. So that's good. But so Amazon jungle is amazing. I would highly recommend it. But I would recommend it for 2 to 3 days tops.
Yeah.
I'm almost positive that if you live somewhere like North America and you go to the Amazon jungle, you're going to be pretty over those living conditions after 2 or 3 days. But it is cool. It was a great trip. Good times. So I enjoyed that. Yeah, that's that. Jared, your triathlon.
It was...
You texted me a photo, man.
Yeah.
First place.
I won my age group.
He won his age group.
Don't know how many people are in it. Maybe a handful, but it was so fun. Catalina was awesome. Like, never been there. First time going, like...
So Catalina
such
is
a cool
an
experience.
Island.
Yeah, Catalina
one of the
Island.
Santa Cruz Islands off the southern coast of California.
Channel right,
islands.
So...
Channel Islands?
Channel Islands.
Yeah,
Santa
one of
Cruz
the Channel Islands.
Santa Cruz is one of the big one. Oh,
yeah.
It's Channel Islands.
One of the Channel Islands, yeah.
One of the Channel Islands.
So yeah, we took the ferry from Long Beach out there. It's like an hour or two, or I don't really remember, honestly. But yeah, super cool. And Avalon, like, cool little downtown and, like, pretty much saw all the same people that were on the ferry the whole weekend. Like, that's how small it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, just like, it was really fun. It was a sprint triathlon. So I finished in like an hour and 45 minutes.
So
my goal was under 2 hours. So stoked about that.
Oh, nice work.
Yeah.
So what was the swim?
Half a mile.
Half a mile swim.
In the bay. And then a 9-mile ride with 1,200 feet of climbing. On a road bike.
Spandex?
Yeah, well, tri-suit. I mean, you pretty much do it all
you
the same
You wore the
thing,
same
so.
Thing on the bike that you swam in?
Yeah, so the tri-suit is underneath.
Triathlon's work.
I don't really care about triathlon, so.
The tri-suit goes underneath. I mean, I had to learn about all this stuff, too. So
yeah,
underneath the wetsuit, take off the wetsuit, and then, yeah, just go. And then you pretty much just take off your riding shoes, put on your running shoes, and then do the – it was a 5K run after the ride. So I definitely, like, did the best out of all of the, you know, disciplines riding the bike because that's what we obviously do.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fun to just like drop people on the climbs and
yeah,
it was fun. I would definitely do it again. We're thinking about doing another one in June Lake. We're probably going to do another one in like half Ironman next summer with a few of the guys. So
nice.
Hopefully I told myself I wasn't going to do another one, but then I got roped into it. So we're going to do another one.
That's how it always happens.
Good, yeah. I think it'll be really fun. Like do a proper legit, you know, half Ironman, like, and then maybe I'll retire after that.
What about those Xterras? Aren't those more of like mountain bikey triathlon style things?
It's the same thing where you ride a mountain bike and you trail run, I believe.
That sounds way cooler.
That sounds cool.
We should do that.
Yeah.
Sounds like a better idea.
Sure.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Well, come do the one in June Lake with us and then we'll do that after.
I want to do the Xterra. We could put our own triathlon on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our own Xterra.
Wow. Sounds like fun.
You're looking at me like that's way more work than I think it is, huh?
It is, for sure.
Liam doesn't cross me as much of a swimmer.
I'll actually swim. I don't run, though.
Okay.
I'll hike all day, or I'll run uphill.
What about, like, power walk? As long as the run's not too long, you could easily do that.
I'll hike.
Yeah. There you go.
Sounds fun. It's a good thing. It's a good way to mix it up. You ride mountain bikes 24/7, so yeah. Mix it up a little triathlon.
Yeah, but it was super fun. My parents went out there, cheered me on, my girlfriend went, so... It was really fun. And also, yeah, just aside from the, you know, athletic aspect, just fun to spend time with them out there and go to a new place. And and I definitely would, like, love to go back and, like, bring a gravel bike or a cross-country bike because you can ride around the whole island, I guess. And there's a bunch of, like, bison out there, like, huge herd of them. So I didn't get to see any, but I would love to go see some bison.
Huh? Yeah. The Adventures of Jared and his spandex. Speaking of spandex, Liam, you're building up a hardtail.
Yeah, but
you're not gonna. It's a
cool
trail
bike,
cool hardtail, not like an ultra lightweight cross country hardtail. But you tell us about it.
Well, I haven't had a hardtail since like I was racing XC in I think 2014 or 15. Even the last few years, I had a full suspension when I was racing. So it's been a while since I've had a hardtail. I had a lot of parts just kind of laying around, and I got to see the Y-Cycles El Jefe in person. Mm-hmm. Y-Cycles is Revel's sister brand. And I was pretty stoked on it, and it looked like it'd be fun. And honestly, I've been riding gravel bikes with like a bunch of my buddies, and I just kind of get upset sometimes when we ride gravel bikes on stuff I don't want to be on a gravel bike. So I was like, we should ride hardtails. And they're like, oh, why would we do that? I'm like, because that's what this is meant for.
Yeah, way more fun.
Yeah.
It's titanium.
At least a flat bar, So it's giving me a titanium hardtail. I have a 120 SID for it, an old like 11-speed drivetrain, SRAM drivetrain. So it'll be kind of fun. It's just kind of like throwing it together through some parts, but like it'll kind of be an experiment to ride something with like modern reach, modern head tube angle, like good like 120 mil fork, 35 stanchions, but not like – it also won't be a pick.
Yeah.
It's a tie frame. It'll be tie bars with a SID fork on it. It'll be light.
Yeah, probably like 20 pounds or something.
Tire choice?
23. I'm gonna start with either Recon 2.4 front, Recon Race 2.4 rear, or Recon Race.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah.
That's going to be a fun bike.
Yeah, it'll be fast. It's just going to be like, well, I'm going to call it like my Gravel Plus bike, but it's really just a hardtail mountain bike. But whenever we want to do gravel routes that are like a little bit and like, there's like definitely like, you know, more than 10% single track in that route, I'm bringing this bike.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No brainer.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. That thing has a bunch of mounts on it too, right? For bike packing, and you can do a little bike packing adventure on it if you wanted to.
Yeah, the guy who it's named after, Jefe, is a sick, like ultra, I don't know what you call it, like
tour.
Long distance, bike packer, like
I have no idea.
Tour racer. Mm-hmm. So he does a lot of single speed. So it can also be ran single speed. So I'm actually kind of stoked on that because I want to run at single speed and like go to single speed events because those look like a really good time.
Yeah, those just look like giant parties.
Exactly.
Yeah. That'd be cool. Isn't that how Matt from Revel had his setup as a single speed?
Yeah, when we rode with him. Yeah,
were doing mountain bike rides with a guy on like full proper, full suspension bikes with gears, and he was just riding a single speed hardtail.
With like technical climbs, like, dude, you're
Yeah, with nuts. These big riser bars on it.
Yeah, that thing was rad. But
It was cool.
Kind of want one too now.
So yeah, we'll see. It'll be an experiment.
Yeah.
Why not?
That's going to be sweet.
Yeah, it seems like a fun bike.
Ride all the bikes.
Yep. It's cool to just try new bikes and different ones, especially if you've been riding full suspension mountain bikes forever, to just try a hardtail because, they have their own unique things.
Yeah. It'll be fun. There's some fun routes I want to do. And, like, now my Revel Ranger has gotten, like, almost so built up now to where it's basically a trail bike again. It's not, like, an XC bike anymore. So yeah. There's some routes that I like doing, especially in the wintertime, like, up in Ojai that... Now my bike's almost too beefy for, so.
Yeah.
But a gravel bike's, like, not quite enough.
Yeah.
Just, like, one individual bike for every slight different terrain.
I'm getting there.
That's what we're all trying to do.
Right.
Well, speaking of all this, something I wanted to bring up is we actually did this last year, last November. Well, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, that whole thing. So we're doing a variation of it this year. So NICA, the National Interscholastic Cycling Association, that is a nonprofit organization that is making the sport of mountain biking an accredited activity, I guess, or sport in middle schools and high schools all over the country. It's something that we really like to support as a nonprofit. And last year we did a big promotion, raised over $10,000 for them. We're doing the same thing this year. So we're basically every order placed on worldwidecycler.com, $1 gets donated to NICA, and we're doing 10% off of all gift cards. So, wise guy move there is if you want to buy something for 10% off, just buy a gift card, then use the code. You know, you can figure it out. Anyways, we're recording this on November 18th. We're already on track to do over $10,000 in terms of a donation for NICA for this month. So I'm stoked on that. I really want to try to I just kind of believe in business 2.0, which is businesses that are trying to like bring good to society and good to the world, and not just like they don't exist for the sake of making money, but they exist for the sake of like making the world better and promoting good, healthy outdoor fun and giving back and yada yada. So that's just my shameless plug for what we're doing for November. It's much better than going to Best Buy and trampling over someone to buy a TV.
Yes.
You know, have you done that? You're looking at me like you've done that.
No, I didn't mean to.
You didn't mean to trample someone?
I was proved innocent, I swear. Yeah, never happened.
Own a TV, Jared?
Yeah, came with the place.
Does your apartment smell of rich mahogany and leather-bound books?
Of course.
Yes, Ron Burgundy. It's an Anchorman joke, if no one got that. I feel like people are losing, like, Anchorman jokes are, like, fading away because the movie's getting so old.
It's a different generation these days.
Yeah, kids are too young.
Well, and then they try and do the sequel, and then it's just,
forget it. Yeah, the sequel bombed, for sure.
It. Go watch the original Anchorman if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, that is a great movie.
Yeah.
So on the same topic of brands that give back, something we have been working on for actually, is it 4 years, Liam? I think 4 years.
I've been in it almost three.
Yeah. So I think 4 years we've been working on this. So a friend of ours, BKXC, Brian Kennedy, he's a kind of big mountain bike guy on YouTube, and he's traveled all around the world sort of documenting awesome mountain bike rides. Him and I have been friends for quite some time, and we put together this brand called Trail One Components. The idea behind the brand is that we're going to make kind of the components we've always wanted, really high-end premium stuff, launching with stems, bars, grips, and a few other things. But on top of that, every component sold, $1 will go back to Trail Networks, either the Trail Network that component's actually named after, or it'll go into a treasury, and the treasury Trail Networks will be able to apply for to get a grant to like work on their trails. And so the brand will make premium components, give back to all the trails that we, ride and love. And yeah, that's kind of like it's baked into the business model to sort of give back to the sport we love. And kind of what really matters here is like we all ride these trails. Not do we all like donate back to the organizations that help build these things. So that's kind of what Trail One was like. That's kind of like the genesis of the idea. And we've been working on it for a really long time. It takes a long time to make really good quality mountain bike components. Turns out that doesn't just happen overnight.
Especially when a pandemic hits and factories
that,
go haywire.
That did slow things down a bit.
And they're like, we don't even see your website, so why are we going to sell your product in front of someone else?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that made it a challenge, but we finally got this, you know, brought this thing to fruition. It's trail1.bike. If you want to check it out, it's also in the show notes. We will be talking about that more in just upcoming media content. Yeah, we're excited. I mean, you know, basically the grips, it was like a collaboration between Liam and myself. If you're watching this video on the MTB Podcast YouTube channel, you can see them. Liam and myself sort of like created the grip that we always wanted with like the exact little specifications of like padding for your hands in this spot and, you know, little ribs there, diamond pattern, yada, yada. So I don't know. It's stuff that we're really proud of and like and enjoy. We actually have a California-made CNC'd stem. That looks pretty rad with some oil slick bolts. So yeah, we've worked really hard on this over a long time and want to actually make a brand that has like very comparable high quality components that can hang with the best of them and also give back to the trails that we love and ride. So check it out. I'd really appreciate it. Trail1.bike. That's one spelled out O-N-E. What next do we have here? Listener questions.
And we've got some good ones.
We have some good ones. Mm-hmm. We always have some good ones. But
as usual.
Before listener questions, a note from our sponsors or something like that. If you are a massive fan of minivans and you are looking for a curated community of the best minivan drivers the world has to offer, check out onlyvans.com. It's where minivan enthusiasts come to collaborate and discuss minivan modifications and off-road adventures. onlyvans.com. Listener questions. Number one, how much tire sealant is too much?
Is there too much? Can you have too much?
Well, according to Orange Seal on their website and on the back of the bottle, which I'm pretty sure on all stand sealant says the exact same thing, and probably every other bottle of sealant, 26 to 27 5-inch tire, 3 ounces, 29ers, 4 ounces.
But that doesn't answer the question.
If you're over that, it's too much.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But I mean, like, I guess, yeah.
It is slightly misleading because when you just say 29er, 4 ounces, there's a big difference between the air volume in a 29 by 2.0 cross-country tire and a 29 by 2.5 enduro tire.
That's true.
So my thought is if they're saying 4 ounces, if you got a skinny XC tire, go 3 ounces. And if you got a beefy enduro or downhill tire, go 5 ounces.
Five is a lot. I say stay 3 to 4.
Coming from late-leaning Jeff, I'm surprised you even suggested adding another ounce to bike on each tire.
Jeff actually doesn't skimp on the tire sealant and tells me to add extra before he goes on trips.
Really?
Well, that's fair.
Probably in his head.
I don't want to have flats.
That's fair.
And have you, okay, the thing is the more flats you've gotten and like little holes you've poked or thorns or whatever, sealant just goes spraying everywhere. You don't want that to run out.
I feel you.
You will need sealant in there. And it dries out.
That's true.
You know, after some months. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, the question there is just a Google search, and that's the recommended thing. It's on the back of every sealant bottle.
Yeah, so.
But it is important. You don't want to put too much because that's kind of useless added weight, but you don't want to put too little because then it dries out too fast. It might not be enough to actually seal the puncture. So it is definitely a valid thing to know.
I guess you're right. If you're like needing to use all 4 ounces of sealant that you put in there, maybe bring a tube also.
You should always have a tube.
Well, I'm just saying.
Didn't we just make a whole video about that?
Yeah. Well, like, I'm just saying, you know, for this
different
guy.
Different ways to carry your MTB Essentials or something like that.
Yeah, this guy should probably carry a tube if he's worried about this.
Yeah.
This is a question for Jared because I'm sure he would do it.
Should I put a coil on a 130mm travel bike? Hell yeah. Why not? Life is short, dude. Get that coil, man. Who else needs to tell you, yeah, do it?
Okay, here's where the question stems from. The question is more of about, like, it's a 130mm travel bike, so the less travel you have, then, like, kind of the theory goes, the less benefit you're going to get from a coil, and the more you're concerned about weight, and coils are always heavier than air shocks.
Yeah, there's a reason it's still a theory. It's not proven.
I'd say it's proven, yes. Debatable, also yes.
I'd say it's a debatable opinion.
Yeah.
It's proven that they're awesome. They feel good. But it depends how you want your bike to feel and what you're going for.
I know. All jokes aside, just depends on where you live and like the trails you ride. I mean, if you live in Squamish, like, yeah, sure.
Well, the other problem there too is a lot of bikes that are 130 mil travel and less don't have a progressive suspension curve.
Yeah.
So you can't even use a coil unless it's a push shock or some custom tuned coil.
Got it.
That has the progressivity built into the actual shim stack of the shock.
Got it.
But I mean, how much to push 11.6 shocks cost, Jared?
Who knows?
Let's just look at his latest credit card.
Your credit card statement knows.
Sponsored by Visa, man.
They're expensive.
Yeah.
So it is hard. So that's something to consider. I mean, that's honestly any bike. If your bike, if the frame was not engineered with like a progressive suspension curve, like you can't really run a coil because the coils are inherently more linear and
blow through the travel. Yeah.
I put a coil on a SP130 before.
You have experience with this.
And that bike is progressive enough that you can do that, right?
No. I still didn't like it.
No?
It's just, still too linear? For me, and I have a hard balance because I'm so light that I have to run a pretty light coil to get the benefit of coil, right? Because like you want it soft off the top. That's why you run a coil spring over air.
Yeah.
But then on a 130, I just felt like I was bottoming out like all the time. And I was like sitting too far in the stroke. Running that coil where I would have had to go up a spring and therefore I'm like just not getting the benefit of a coil anymore.
What about like a progressive spring?
I had a MRP progressive spring on it actually.
Cane Creek makes those now too,
right? Yeah. Yeah. I had an MRP on it and I just bottomed out too much for my like riding style.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up going with a Super Deluxe with a Magneg and I kind of got the best of both worlds. But I also put a push shock on my Revel Ranger, which Jared also just did.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I just borrowed that push shock from Revel.
Nice.
I didn't buy it. Jared bought his. Just saying.
Just for the record.
For the record.
For the record.
And it was really fun, and I raced an enduro race on it with 115-mile travel with a push shock. But again, it's a different situation.
So these guys are putting coil shocks on a 115-mil travel bike.
Yep.
So the answer to the question, should you put one on a 130-mil travel bike, is sure.
Yeah.
You know, well, one
suits your riding style and where
is the bike progressive enough to do it, or are you running a custom shock that's got, you know, that's compensating for that? So you got to tick both those boxes, regardless of the travel bike.
Or you could send it to like Avalanche or something, probably, right? Have them like tune it for you, right? Maybe.
Can you do that on any shock?
You could probably do that.
They might be able to take you from like a medium to like a more compression tune,
like with more high speed, basically
aggressive tune.
Is that what that would be? More high speed to ramp it up.
Well,
you wouldn't just want high speed though, because then it would get kind of harsh.
Got
feel it. Like you're hitting a wall.
Interesting.
Yeah.
This stuff does get pretty complicated.
It gets
by the time
deep into some graphs.
And it's also one of those things that like. One, it's fun to just change parts out and experiment with them. So there's always that.
Don't be telling me.
The other part is the vast majority of sort of novice and intermediate riders are not going to notice any like huge gains. They might be negligible or like kind of notice or placebo effect, but you're kind of like splitting hairs here. You're not getting anything like monumentally different or better. I don't know. I guess depending on where you're coming from, things like that. So I don't know. Always things to consider when you're doing that stuff. But, you know, experimenting with new bike parts is just addicting and fun. So
yeah. So long story short.
Don't do it like – don't be cavalier about it. Like look into what you're buying and make sure you're not just like wasting money on something that's not going to work right.
Right. So long story short, it depends.
Yeah, I guess that is how it goes. That's
kind of
like – that's like most mountain bike upgrades.
Yeah.
Is this a relevant upgrade? It depends.
It depends.
Situational. Yes.
Well, this ties into the next question really well, which is how low should the wiper O-ring get on your shock after a ride? So that's that little rubber O-ring that's on your fork stanchion and your rear shock stanchion.
I call it the phonometer or the phonometer.
Phonometer. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, so that thing's there. That thing is there for, I mean, a couple of reasons. One, to help you figure out your sag when you're initially setting up your suspension. But it's also there for you to know, like, is, you know, do you just bounce up and down on the bike in the parking lot and the thing is like a pretty clear indicator like, hey, you totally bottomed out, or only you got like 10% of your travel and you bunny hop. That's not a good sign either. So it's to let you know kind of how much of your suspension you're using. So that's what it's indicating. And it gets a little challenging to figure that out because like you do want to use like most of your suspension. You don't want to be bottoming out a lot. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't happen. But you kind of do want to bottom out in the event that like You should have bottomed out. If you're like casing a jump or hitting some like big too flat drop, like you do want to bottom out. And if you're not, your suspension's probably too stiff for the rest of the ride.
Right.
So that's kind of what that thing's there to help you learn that. One of the best ways that I've seen people learn suspension kind of from square one is using one of those Cork shock whizzes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, great that's idea. A product that SRAM bought. SRAM owns Cork, and it hooks up to your air fork or shock, and it's crazy. Bluetooth. Yeah. You've used one,
I've actually never used it, but I've been meaning to use it for about 3 years now.
Oh, you should use it.
You've used it, right, Liam?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I should.
We have a whole video, detailed video about what it is on YouTube and how to set it up and like how it works and all that.
So yeah.
What's your experience with it? You like set it up and it tells you what?
Yeah, I mean, it gives you a lot of info and like data about your ride, and it makes suggestions based on that. So it basically takes what you're riding and how much your sag you're using, dynamic sag. It'll even measure like how many bottom outs you had or harsh hits you had.
Wow.
So you could like dial in high speed, low speed. It'll give you all these suggestions. It does just put it into algorithm and put it out. So like you have to ride a pretty dynamic trail, I would say, before you start making like radical changes.
And it does kind of tell you like, hey, we don't have enough data to give you suggestions.
Yeah, it'll actually give you a score, I believe, like a percentage score. Like, oh yeah, you're like a 92%, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and then you can get like, you know, 100% score where it has like enough data to like make the changes. So I think it's good. I also just think it's a good learning tool to like know what high speed, it'll tell you like, oh, if you change this high speed compression, you'll feel it here. If you change this low speed rebound, this is where you're going to feel it, or add a volume spacer. And like, so it educates you as it's like giving you all of its data. So
that's pretty cool.
I think that alone is like worth using it, even if you like maybe make a little change here or there, at least you like are understanding why you made that change.
Yeah.
Which I think is the biggest point for like any suspension.
Yeah, so, that's where I recommend it to people, because a lot of people, this is confusing. High and low speed compression, you know, beginning and ending stroke rebound, air pressure, tokens, like all this stuff is quite complex.
No one even says beginning ending stroke rebound. It'd make more sense if they did.
that's true.
And that was basically low speed and high speed, right?
Yeah.
The beginning and ending stroke.
So it's just really complicated, and you know, high end mountain bike suspension's got this like plethora of adjustments that most people are like, oh my Lord, what do I do with this? And the ShockWiz helps you figure out what that is and educate you on that. And it's fun to use. It's kind of pricey. It's like, what, $300?
Yeah, $200.
Yeah. It's not cheap, but a lot of what we've seen people do, friends, customers, they buy one and they all just share it. Because like you're only going to need it for a month, 2 months, like play around with it for a while and then
depends on
pass it off to your buddy and
if you get a new fork or if you get a new shock, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Every time you get a new thing, it like helps you set it up right the first time. Mm-hmm. But usually, to me, it's like a fun, interactive, educational like device.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I think a lot of mountain bikers enjoy it for that.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but you can basically go in there and tell it what you want your bike to feel like, right? Like poppy or playful or planted, and then like once you select that, it'll give you like what measurements you need to, you know, or what adjustments you need to make, right?
Yeah, there's like I think two different bars with three different adjustments going from like planted to playful or like maybe it's planted to poppy, and like there's two of them. So you can kind of toggle those around and it'll spit out your different options. So
it's pretty sweet. Yeah. You should probably do it.
Yeah, you should mess with it for sure.
Nice. Yeah, I've been trying to dial in that Fox 36 I have, but I end up too high on the pressure because I want it to be like soft off the top, but I want it to ramp up. So I should probably try it.
Use it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think we just have one here.
Yeah, we do.
For the staff to use.
They'll bring it up because I have no excuse.
Yeah, if you're curious about it, just type Cork ShockWiz into YouTube.
Q-U-A-R-Q. Yeah.
Just ShockWiz.
Cork, not like a wine cork, but cork.
Yeah, Cork.
Quark.
Quark.
Yes.
Quark.
Yes,
Quark. That's a strange name. I have no idea where the root of that name is. We should look that up. Next question is, will we see any Kettle Mountain jackets anytime soon? Love the brand. Smiley face.
I put the smiley face, by the way.
Oh, you put the smiley face?
Yeah. I just thought it was a nice gesture for them to say that.
Great. The answer is yes. We actually just put them on the site. We have a lightweight jacket and then the same version of it that's fleece lined. We worked super hard on this, like a four-way stretch, really nice jacket that works good for riding, traveling, all sort of stuff. We want to tick the boxes with Kettle. Just good apparel that works in a lot of scenarios and lasts you a really, really long time with a lifetime warranty. So yes, that's on the Kettle Mountain website. The fleece lined one is not yet, but it will be soon. And we have a couple of nice performance hoodies coming in like the next couple months. So yeah, it's coming. Wintertime's coming. We're slowly but surely, you know, adding more stuff to the Kettle Mountain product line and refining the existing stuff and doing our best to just build really good technical apparel that we like. So, have you used a jacket yet?
I'm really excited for that jacket. I got to try it today.
The word was that none of the staff can buy them because we only have like a small first batch. And
I've probably got to spend more time in it than anybody else because we did the photo shoot today. So,
I have a prototype one that has like way too tight of like cuffs on it.
Oh, that's perfect. That's so mine. That's all me.
But no, yeah, the new jacket's nice. Rad. I love it. I can't wait to get one.
Yeah, DJ Meatball, who's over here doing the audio right now, he has a prototype one that's got like a white liner in it. Look, he's all smiling. Dang he it. Likes it.
Okay, so there are people who have spent more time in it than me. Fine.
DJ Meatball gets the prototype ones because he's also a size small like me. So like the like P1s, P2s that I don't use, I just give them to him.
I guess I got some more LBs to drop.
You're not going to think you're small regardless of LBs.
All right, you're right.
You're so, right. Yes, Kettle Mountain jackets are coming, and yeah, we worked really hard on those. They came out nice.
They did.
All right. Would Jeff or any of us ever go back to 27.5?
Good question. Liam, you go first.
Yeah, you're the only one who's even ridden a 27.5 bike in the last few years.
Only at the back wheel.
Me too.
Well, that's true. What did you ride?
I had a Nomad when I started here. Well, 3 years ago. Okay. You said a few.
Okay, 3 years ago, but how many bikes ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
How many bikes?
Counted recently in 12. So there you go.
You know, it's not that like, it's not that bad. Like, it's not. Okay.
You're not selling it. You're not selling it.
You want me to start?
Yeah.
If it was like, hey, you're gonna start riding this brand that you know only has 27.5 bikes now. It's like, okay, I'll get used to it, and like within like 2 weeks, I'll be riding the same speed, the same everything. Like, you know, it's not like a major difference. And they have their benefits and they're super fun. Do I see myself like going out and targeting to buy a 27.5 full suspension bike soon? Probably not.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
So in the scenario, someone's forcing you to ride it and you've been given a couple of weeks to get used to it. I'm sorry. I'm just joking.
Yeah. I mean,
it is like this is a tough question because 27.5, it's not that it's bad. It just has a different use case that like 27.5 downhill bike all day. I would never ride a 29-inch downhill bike, mostly because like I'm not racing the thing.
Yeah, you're just going to bike parks. And
yeah, if you're just going to the bike park on a downhill bike, 27.5 is great.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like your general sort of trail enduro bike that you're doing a lot of climbing on, that's where you get such good advantages of the 29-inch wheels.
Yeah.
Including the down, it's hard
and climbing
to,
and.
Yeah, there's just a lot of advantages to it. I mean, certainly there's certainly not one is better than the other. It just depends on your preference, right? And I mean, I think that's what all of the legitimate sort of like 27.5 versus 29 articles and videos, like in my opinion, like there's no defined winner. And if someone tells you there is, they're blowing smoke. It's just a personal preference. Like if you want the thing to be a little bit more like flickable and sort of poppy and feel slightly more like a BMX bike, then sure, of course, smaller wheels are going to feel fun for you.
Yeah.
And if you want it to be a little bit kind of faster and, I don't know, roll over things slightly easier and some of those advantages, then yeah, 29 is going to be better for you. So not one's better than the other, it's just different, it's preference. But for most of what we do in like our general trail enduro riding, 29s just work great and we just always ride them and kind of stick to them.
Yeah.
I'll answer.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to build a 27.5 bike for the park. Boom. There you go. Maybe even with a dual crown fork.
I want to build a mullet bike.
Yeah. See, that's the thing.
Which, Liam, you had.
Yeah, I had a Revo rail as a mullet, and it was really fun. And, like, I rode around here, and it was pretty fun. But around us, locally, we have pretty much fast SoCal-style trails that are, like, straightaway rock gardens.
Yeah.
You know?
Not a lot of tight stuff.
Or like nothing like overly steep where I needed like rear wheel clearance either. I took it to Santa Cruz and loved it up there. I was like, oh, this bike's amazing.
Yeah.
And I pretty much like broke it in up there and got used to it up there. And then I was like, yeah, I love this bike as it is. And I came back down here and I rode the trails that I'm used to riding all the time. And I was like, oh, okay, this is where like it's not as fast or like, you know, it wasn't as easy to get through that section. And it's a pretty small difference. And like, if I was like, gonna like ride it for like 6 months, I would have been fine. I wouldn't have noticed any difference. And
yeah.
I mean, it's tons of people riding mullets now all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't like the immediate change of efficiency that I was feeling. So kind of a nerd on that. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, once you feel that, it's hard to unfeel that.
I always wanted to take like something like a lighter weight travel trail bike, like a Ranger, and make that a mullet, like a lightweight mullet. Not like, because you had like a pretty beefy, yeah, like, beefy bike, parky and duro bike. Yeah. I wanted to take like a, like originally my idea was to take a Yeti SB45, like a, you know, lightweight.
Actually, I remember that.
115 mil travel trail bike.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Mullet. Yeah, because that was also like, no, I wouldn't say it wasn't, it definitely wasn't slack, it wasn't steep, but like it would have been fine to put a 27.5 rear wheel on and ride.
Yeah.
So
here's a question. Would you rather do start off with a 29er and make it a mullet, or start off with a 27.5 and make it a mullet? Which would end up with the better bike?
I'm on the side of 29er make it a mullet, because it's easier to raise BB than it is to lower BB.
Okay.
Yeah, I would do the same thing, mostly because like if you take a 29er and you make it a mullet, your bottom bracket is going to be like abnormally low, which is awesome, unless you're pedaling.
Mm-hmm.
But who cares about pedaling, right?
Especially if you're making a mullet.
If I took my Ranger, my Rebel Ranger right now, 115 mil travel in the back, 120 in the front, and if I made just put a 27.5 rear wheel on it right now, it would be like annoying on technical climbs. Like I'd be smashing my feet into things.
Yeah.
But I think it would be wild going down, because it would be so low to the ground.
Yeah.
And I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
We should try that.
Why not?
We should try that.
Let's try that.
Let's get a 27.5 wheel and let's do it.
Well, yeah, 27.5. Yeah. Could be fun. But boom. I'd have to have a matching wheel set.
Yeah.
I just,
even for a test?
I have too much OCD to not have a matching wheel set.
Even for a test?
I hear DJ Meatball just laughing at me right now because I said that. maybe.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe if we did it blindfolded, then you wouldn't see.
How you, what?
I'm just kidding.
How are you going to ride a blindfolded?
Exactly. It'd be ridiculous.
All right, Jared, this question is for you.
All right.
What are your opinions on socks and shoes as a combo?
That's an excellent question. My thoughts on socks and shoes as a combo. I could take it or leave it. Personally, I prefer socks and Birkenstocks, but you know, if you want to wear closed-toed shoes, by all means.
If you had to wear one more combo for the rest of your life, it would be socks and Birkenstocks.
This question doesn't even make any sense. Like, what was this guy trying to ask us?
I don't know. That's my favorite part about it, though. Is just like, what are your opinions on socks and shoes as a combo? Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're okay. It's okay. But there's better combinations out there like socks and Birkenstocks.
Or and, like no the, socks and shoes? Or?
No. Well, that's ridiculous.
No, I do it in the summer sometimes, but it makes your shoes smelly.
You do sandals. I mean, I mean, socks and stocks, the way to go. It's the future.
It's the future? Stocks and socks?
It's also the present.
Stocks and socks. Okay. What is your favorite pasta, Jared?
Oh, okay, well, that's a really tough one.
Hitting him with a left hook.
Is lasagna included?
No.
I have no idea.
This is really tough because this boils down to the sauce, too. So
all right, less than 30 seconds here.
Is it going to be a white sauce or red sauce?
White sauce.
It's gonna. If it's a white sauce, then it's got to be long noodles, and I'm probably going to say a linguine. If it's a white sauce, it's linguine. If it's a red sauce, I'm going to go with like a farfalla or a penne or a rigatoni.
Wow, you really know your pastas.
That's one of my favorite
things. A way more educated answer than I expected.
Funny enough, that was your smoker that you brought here for the little like company.
For the barbecue?
Barbecue.
Yeah.
Yeah. We posted stories, Instagram stories of like some of the meat, and it's got like so many replies and views. Like people were stoked on just seeing like meat on our Instagram.
Right? People were really stoked about that. And I was stoked that people were stoked on
And then
meat.
Of course we also featured DJ Meatball over here doing the audio, who is a vegan. And featured his double impossible. He was eating an impossible burger with two patties, and he called it a double vegan burger or something by mistake.
But there was like no condiments on it.
Hashtag double vegan. And it was just like bread and just dry veggie patties.
It's a really sad sight.
And mustard on it.
That was a really sad sight. I mean,
but dude, people were loving the meat. Yeah. They were like. There was like
that was really good.
A bunch of replies to that Instagram story of like, "Oh, that
we'll
meat
definitely
looks
do
so
it again." We'll definitely do it again. And I don't know. Next time might be pulled pork. I might wake up super early and throw a pork shoulder on. And we'll do pulled pork sandwiches and like carnitas, like we did it in Colorado.
Yes.
Because that'd be great. And then, or I don't know, maybe do another tri-tip. But the prices of red meat is like skyrocketing these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Company expenditure.
Cool.
Let's do brisket though. That's my favorite.
Okay, we'll do brisket.
I'm
for
a brisket
you.
Fan.
Perfect.
Can you do like a 24-hour brisket?
Oh. Ooh. Daddy.
Just the way they do it in Texas. It's so good.
I'll do a brisket for you just the way you like it.
Perfect.
Yeah. Perfect. Say less.
Say less. This question is, what is Jeff going to build up next? What bike is Jeff going to build up next? So I thought about this.
Yeah.
And
let's start this off with Jeff has a record going right now for having a bike the longest he's ever had, and it is his Rebel Ranger. And it is 1 year.
12 months. Yeah.
Longest since I've been here.
And counting.
By a long shot.
It's still November.
Next day. It's still there.
November 2020. Yeah, it's still there. Well, okay, there's I do love that bike, and I have no reason to sell it. But I also still have it because, like, bikes are limited. Inventory is still an issue in the whole industry at large. So it's almost so problematic. Like, building bikes in the past was just like, hey, I want to build this bike. Here are all the parts. Like, let's do it. And now it's like a nightmare of like,
sure.
Oh, well, that's not in stock. That's going to take 2 months. Like, that's going to take 4 months. Like, oh, let's just. So I just don't want to deal with the nightmare. So I'm just going to keep riding what I have.
Yeah.
And
it's fair.
You know, yeah. Do you think people would really be upset that we cut an Eagle cassette now that they can't get one for 3 months?
Yeah. Yeah. So my Rebel Ranger. Yeah. We were talking to Love MTB, the YouTuber. Cool dude on the phone today on a call, and he was asking me, he's like, are you still riding that 12 speed that you, what did he say, he's like, that you cut into an 11 speed? And so we took an Eagle cassette, and well, I didn't do it, it was just my idea, but Liam did it. He was dremeled off the 52 tooth cog.
Yeah.
And then I had this beautiful all gold.
It's beautiful.
Eagle cassette.
It's beautiful.
Not a single cog.
Do you like gold?
You like a gold?
Smelted gold.
It's all smelted gold.
It's nice. Okay, we're not even answering this question. Question.
What are you going to build up next?
I think I'm going to build up that Salsa Blackthorn.
Park bike?
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
But I've also been thinking about a hardtail.
Ooh.
Get what kind of those
titanium hardtails, like all Y-cycles?
Maybe that Yeti ARC.
Yeti ARC?
I don't know what I want to do.
See, I feel like for me, when I was thinking about hardtail, I thought about the Yeti ARC, and the lines of it are like so sexy.
It's a good looking bike.
It's such a good looking bike.
And that new Dawn color.
That new Dawn.
Dawn Perignon.
And it's fun.
I had an old BMX bike that color, and it's so sick. But there's this part of me that, like, I feel like a rigid bike, especially a hardtail mountain bike, should be out of a metal, and it has more soul that way.
Yeah.
And I've never owned a titanium mountain bike, so.
It's just got that je ne sais quoi, that kind of forever feel, you know?
Creme like, de la creme.
Creme de la creme, je ne sais quoi.
The creme de la creme. That's a good question for YouTube community, a poll.
Yeah.
What type of bike has more soul? Carbon bike, aluminum bike, titanium bike, steel bike?
We all know it's
titanium. You don't know the answer to that. There's going to be more thousands soul, of votes on that.
More
write that down.
Soul.
Yeah, it doesn't really make any sense, but that's the point. What frame material has the most soul? Question mark.
I feel like any metal
aluminum,
just has a little more.
Carbon, titanium, steel.
Bamboo.
Sure, whatever.
Would you ride a bamboo bike?
Oh, have you seen those ones that they make?
Yeah, they're sweet.
Those are so hipster. I don't live in San Francisco. Not right now.
Hey, man.
Ride that thing to the post office to make my deliveries.
The Salsa Blackthorn park bike, I've been thinking about putting a actual, like a dual crown, like a boxer on that.
Yeah.
That'd do it.
Rad.
A 190 boxer is the same actual crown.
We should get started on that now, seeing as it's November and I'm not going to ride it until April. So
yeah, and I also want to ride it because you're going to ride it like 3 times and I'll ride it the rest of the time.
Might go to Whistler this year or next year.
Well, I'll join you, but like if when you're not
Canadian
riding it
Canadian border
here,
opens.
I'm
me
gonna,
too. It
I'm
is open.
Ride it. It is open.
We're in, baby.
Yeah.
Wait, no, no.
Going
it's
back
it's
to Whistler.
Still closed.
Trust me, the bike park will be crowded. We'll go there in May, though.
Yeah, I would love to go early season.
So,
that'd be sweet.
Salsa Blackthorn. Salsa is like, what would you say the brand is predominantly known for? Like adventure cycling.
Adventure bikes, definitely.
Yeah, adventure bikes.
And
but
they kill it in that,
they
in
have,
that zone.
They have adventured their way into like good, high-end, full suspension mountain bikes.
This guy is a
like
freaking
that? That
literary good. Genius.
They've adventured their way into high-end mountain bikes and worked with Dave Weigel, DW, the guy who makes the suspension platforms for, what, Ibis, Pivot, DaVinci, Evil, who else?
Salsa.
Oh, yeah, and Salsa, yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm sure there's more. He did Iron Horse.
But Iron Horse won that one, all
one of
those
the most
championships.
Winningest bikes ever.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave Weigel is like a suspension kinematics genius, incredible guy. But so he worked with Salsa to build their full suspension mountain bikes, which are pretty epic. The Cassidy and the Blackthorn. And we have that raw aluminum Blackthorn frame here.
Actually, good. Cassidy frame.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, technically the same thing with
the
different
linkage. The same frame, different linkage and shock stroke.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we have the longer travel one.
Gotcha.
Yep. It's a pretty cool concept, swapping out the links and the shocks and get mm-hmm. a different bike, pretty much.
Yes, yeah, so it's the same bike, just a different link and different shock. It changes the travel. Yeah, those things are well designed. I was super impressed with them.
You know,
so I don't know. I have the frame sitting here, so that's probably what I'm going to build up next.
I fully support that.
Thank you.
Just want to let you know that.
And I don't have a long travel bike like that.
No, you don't. You haven't
don't
had one for a while. Like, when was the last long travel bike you had?
Oh, I had a Transition downhill bike.
TR11.
TR11.
Wow. Years ago, before I probably started.
Probably just when
I never
you
saw
started.
It.
I was like 3 years ago. I used to go to Whistler every summer and just ride the downhill park. I would just ride downhill bikes. It was so fun. But I stopped. I don't know.
Time to go
Lost
back.
Lost it. Time to go back.
Time to go back.
This question, I saw this question, and I knew one of you yahoos put this in here. What is scarier, Jeff that is late for an appointment or drunk on a business trip? And I knew one of you yahoos did it because you're one of the few people I've seen both of those things. Let me ask you, why'd you ask this question?
Well, mostly because you were late the other day.
For what?
I don't know, running around. You're.
Whatever. I do that all the time.
Yeah, but you're late. Like, I gotta go! Yeah. Smalley! Runs out of here, like, shirt half on, riding a bike half the time, or towing a bike, like, behind him.
I gotta go!
I'm late! Runs out of here, like... Like you almost want to run with him because you're like, what's happening? Like, is something coming?
Hey, you don't know if you're going to see him again. When's the next time I'm going to see him? Am I going to see him again?
And then, I mean, Jeff just anytime he's like has a drink, he just, you know, he gets a little wild.
Just an exaggerated version of the sober self.
Exactly.
Yeah, in vino veritas is what they say.
In vino veritas.
In vino veritas.
And that's cool. What does that mean?
That means in wine there's truth, which does mean like when you're drunk you are your true self.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the Romans came
up
with that.
He's kind of like a puppy dog. You can just tell him to do stuff and he'll do it.
I think drunk Jeff is spontaneous. Very spontaneous.
Yeah, true.
Which can be scary, but fun.
I like to live my life where like you just really have this nice healthy balance of serious and not serious. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So it's like you still got to do meaningful things, like create meaningful things, like bring value to the world, is, you know, do what you can, but also like really like not take yourself seriously and just do ridiculous stuff that makes you laugh.
I agree wholeheartedly.
You know?
Oh yeah.
So. Yeah. I mean, you guys definitely saw that in vivid colors on the last trip we took to Colorado.
Oh, I've seen it plenty of times, and that's why I enjoy working here.
Couldn't have had more fun.
Yeah, it's a good time. Yeah, that was a good trip. We should do another trip.
We are doing more trips.
Oh, yeah, we have two Chasing Epic trips planned next year.
Yeah, we do.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait.
We should do more. We should go to Arizona and ride with Nate Hills this winter.
Let's do it.
I'm actually going to Arizona this weekend to ride with my goofball friends.
I know. I didn't get an invite on that one.
I know.
Bummed.
Sorry, dude. Do you want to go to race?
No, I can't. On that? It's too.
Yeah.
Overbooked.
You're overbooked?
I'm overbooked. I normally say yes to that every time, but.
Race would be cool. I'm going to Race MTB Indoor Mountain Bike Park, Cleveland, Ohio on.
Next weekend?
The Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Okay, yeah.
I don't remember what day that is. 29th or something? 28th? Mm-hmm.
I've wanted to go there since I was like 14.
Yeah, it's cool. So I used to go there. I went there every year in the fall when they're on like their opening day ish from 2009 to 2014 with the Mullally brothers.
You know, they're only open for the winter?
They're only open for the winter.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Mm-hmm.
I guess the idea is that like you can ride bikes outside in Ohio in the summer, so do that. But I don't know. Look it up. Raise Indoor MTB. Place is awesome.
It's like a Willy Wonka candy factory for indoor bikes.
Yeah,
dirt
so
dumpers.
Cool. Yeah.
Seen a bunch of like YouTube videos on it. It looks really cool.
Yeah, the place is like, there's like a whole cross-country track that like you can go in and like have fun on, and there's like dirt jumps and box jumps and skinny bridges and pump tracks, and it's like infinite. It like never ends.
Yeah.
And you just like stumble into like a new warehouse building with like new ramps in it, and you're like, whoa, it's like a maze. It's crazy.
That's so cool.
It's really cool. It's probably the coolest thing in Cleveland. I would never go to that whole state. I'm sorry.
Anybody, any listeners in Ohio?
Sorry.
We apologize.
Sorry about that comment.
And anytime you want to come out to California, we're happy to have you.
See you in January. Yeah. All right. Well, before people in Ohio get any more mad at us, we should close this podcast out. Thank you and good luck.
Thank you for listening.
We love you.
We love you. We appreciate it genuinely. And do we have anything else?
Yeah, spread love.
I don't think so.
Spread love, peace, and happiness, man.
Peace and love, man.